Don Machholz, and you're listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 3, for the week of January 22nd, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, January 22nd, the moon is leaving the morning sky, passing south of the sun in a new moon phase on January 24th, and then entering our evening sky as a thin crescent. A week from now, on Tuesday, January 28th, the moon will still be a thin crescent in the evening sky. So this is a good week to get out and do some deep sky observation in both the morning and evening skies, as the moon will not be a major hindrance. In the evening skies this week, you will see the planet Venus in the southwest. If you have a telescope, take a good look at it on the evenings of January 26th and 27th. That's next Sunday and Monday evenings. The planet Venus will pass just south of the distant planet Neptune, and Europe and Africa are well placed to observe them within 5 arc minutes of each other on the evening of January 27th. About 9 hours later, the planet Venus passes within 1 arc minute of the 4.2 magnitude star Phi Aquarii. We will seldom mention Neptune in these podcasts, but here we are. And on the evenings of January 26th and 27th, you can easily find Neptune by first finding the planet Venus. By the way, they appear close together, but they're actually very far apart. Venus is 104 million miles away from us, and Neptune is 27 times farther away at 2.85 billion miles away. And that star? It is 222 light years away, or 12.5 billion times farther away than Venus. One more thing about the planet Venus. The moon pairs up with it on the evenings of both January 27th and 28th. And don't forget to look to the east and check out the red star Betelgeuse, which is in the constellation Orion. It is dimmer than usual, and I'll be mentioning this in these podcasts for the next few months. You are unlikely to ever see it this faint. And later in this podcast, I'll explain how you can go out this week and estimate its brightness. In the morning sky, a thin crescent moon lines up with the planet Jupiter on January 22nd and 23rd. This will be Wednesday and Thursday morning. They will be low in the sky about an hour before sunrise. The International Space Station this week is visible in the evening sky for the Northern Hemisphere. For mid-northern latitudes, you may have a few nights next week when it will not be visible at all. Meanwhile, our friends in New Zealand and the rest of the Southern Hemisphere can see it in their morning sky. It appears as a slow-moving star, and in a telescope using at least 50 power, you may be able to make out its shape as it glides across the sky. Now, the main problem with this observation is keeping it centered in the telescope. Go to the website heavens-above.com. That's heavens-above.com. Enter your location and find out where and when to see it. You can also use the heavens-above.com website to find out where and when the latest, that is a third set of Starlink satellites, will be visible. Then go out and have a look. I saw a group pass nearly overhead last week, 60 objects visible to the unaided eye, spaced a few degrees apart in a line. It looks like a big train in the sky. Here's an age-old question. How bright is that star? When astronomers discuss the brightness of something, do they say, well, star A is pretty bright, but certainly not as bright as star B, And star A is a bit fainter than star C, not by a lot, but by only a little bit. Actually, astronomers don't talk like that. They use something known as the magnitude scale to discuss the brightness of astronomical objects. Let's discuss the magnitude scale. Two main things to remember about the magnitude scale. First, the smaller the number, the brighter the star. So a star of magnitude 2 is actually brighter than a star of magnitude 4. And a 6 magnitude star, it is fainter than both a 2nd magnitude star and a 4th magnitude star. Magnitudes can also be negative numbers, that is, for very bright objects. Venus can be as bright as magnitude negative 4.9, the full moon is magnitude negative 12.7, and the sun, it shines at a magnitude negative 26.7. We can use the word minus instead of negative when talking about the magnitude of bright objects. They say, for instance, an asteroid can be anywhere from magnitude 30 to magnitude minus 30, depending upon whether it's far away in the dark sky or, on the other extreme, exploding over your head. The second thing to remember about magnitude is that it is not a linear scale, but logarithmic. Each magnitude is 2.51 times the brightness of the next higher magnitude number. So a 2nd magnitude star is 2.5 times brighter than a 3rd magnitude star. A 2nd magnitude star is also 2.5 times 2.5 equals 6.3 times brighter than a 4th magnitude star. And comparing a 2nd magnitude star to a star of 6th magnitude, the brightness difference is 40 times for the two stars that differ by 4 magnitudes. So, when the planet Venus passes by that star of 4.2 magnitude next week, what is the brightness difference between the planet Venus and the star? Venus is at magnitude minus 4.1, so the difference is about 8 magnitudes, which is more than 1,600 times in brightness. And when Venus passes the 8th magnitude planet Neptune, the difference is 12 magnitudes, or a difference of 64,000 times in brightness. In a practical sense, what are the magnitudes of some of the things you can see in your sky? As we said, the sun is minus 26.7, the full moon minus 12.7, and Venus varies between minus 3.8 and minus 4.9. The planet Jupiter is in the magnitude minus 2 range. It varies. And the planet Mars varies even more. But when it's closest to us every 2.2 years, it can reach a minus 3 magnitude. As for stars, the brightest star in the sky, Sirius, is magnitude minus 1.46. Now there's three other stars, Canopus, Alpha Centauri, and Arcturus, that are all in the negative magnitude range. The North Star, which varies some in brightness, shines at magnitude 2. It's the 49th brightest star in the sky, and it is not well known because it's bright, because it isn't that bright. It's well known because it is at the right place at the right time. It is within 1 degree of true north. If you were standing at the North Pole, the North Star would be overhead. And if you were on the equator, it would be on your northern horizon. Its height in your sky gives you your approximate latitude. Remember that if you ever get lost at night under a clear sky in the northern hemisphere and you have a protractor, but we have digressed. So the North Star is of magnitude 2.0, and the faintest star that you can see is about 6 magnitude. With binoculars, you can see fainter, to somewhere between magnitude 9 and 10, and with a telescope, you can see even fainter. The Hubble Space Telescope can see down to about magnitude 28. Two more things about magnitude. We have been talking about apparent magnitude, the brightness something appears to be seen from Earth. Astronomers can also calculate the absolute magnitude when they know how far an object is from us. The standard distance for absolute magnitude for stars is, how bright would it be if it were 33 light years from us? Don't ask how we derive the distance of 33 years. We'll cover that in a future broadcast. For objects in the solar system, the question is, how bright would it be if it were 93 million miles from both the Earth and the Sun? Okay, 93 million miles is the average distance from the Earth to the Sun. By using absolute magnitude, astronomers can discern if that star is a 100-watt light bulb far away or a 10-watt light bulb very close by. That is very important when discussing the nature and makeup of stars. In each case, the apparent magnitude would be the same, but the absolute magnitudes would be much different. Secondly, the brightness of extended objects, such as galaxies, clusters, and comets, are also expressed in magnitude, but they are compared to stars placed out of focus until they are about the size of the extended objects. Now, as you may know, as stars are defocused, they get bigger and dimmer. The light is spread out over a larger area. Therefore, a comet or galaxy of magnitude 9 will be more difficult to see and would seem fainter than a star of magnitude 9. I said that typically, the faintest star visible to the unaided eye is about 6 magnitude. That depends upon several things, especially your eyes and the darkness and steadiness of the night sky. Last week, I asked you to go out and count the number of stars you can see in the square of Pegasus. Now, if you didn't get to do that last week, try counting the number of stars you see in the square of Pegasus this week, excluding the 4 bright stars forming the square. You can go to my website, donmockles.com, and download the spreadsheet for the number of stars in the square of Pegasus, but I'll give you the shorthand. If you could see 2 stars, you can see down to magnitude 4.6. If you counted 5, then you can see down to magnitude 5. If you counted 7 stars in the square of Pegasus, you can see down to magnitude 5.5. And those seeing 10 stars can see magnitude 5.8. And if you counted 15 stars, which is what I would often get at my comet hunting site in California years ago, you can see to magnitude 6.0. Under dark skies and with good eyes, if you see 36 stars, you're seeing to magnitude 6.5. And if you're seeing 55 stars, now don't lie now, we are on the honor system, well, then you're seeing to magnitude 6.75, which is very, very faint. Again, the spreadsheet is on my website. Print it out and use it to rate your observing sites. Our naked eye challenge for this week is to make a magnitude estimate of the star Betelgeuse. Okay, we've talked about star magnitudes. Let's put that to work in a practical manner. Now, this isn't rocket science. This is simple observation, estimation, and forming an informed opinion about the brightness of a star. For this, you'll need to download this star map from my website. It's entitled Podcast 3 Star Map 1. And while you're at it, get Podcast 3 Star Map 2 also. Also, grab a flashlight or use the light on your cell phone, but dim the light. And a quick way to do this is to put a sock over it, preferably a red sock. I'm also going to ask you to read the star map close by and illuminated by a dim flashlight, and then look at the star's dark and distance. This may seem awkward and difficult at first, but work at it, and in time you'll get better at this. You will wish that you had 3 hands, 2 for the map and 1 for the flashlight, but believe me, that's not going to happen. Another method that might work for some of you would be to download the star map onto your phone, open it, and dim the brightness on your phone screen, and then read the map off of your phone. Before going outside, take a quick look over the map. The big circle is the horizon. Venus is in the lower right, And on the left side of the circle in the east, labeled with an E, some of the stars have numbers. Star Map 1 shows the whole sky seen from mid-northern latitudes an hour after sunset on January 21st, 2020, but can be used for the whole week without much confusion. Now, those numbers that you saw next to the stars, those numbers are the magnitudes of each of those stars. As you stand outside with the star map over your head facing south, everything inside the circle should be above your horizon, and the center of the chart is overhead. You can see the square of Pegasus high and slightly to the right, and you should be able to find the bright planet Venus low and to the right. Now, I'm going to ask you to turn 90 degrees to the left. So instead of facing south, you're facing east. At the same time, rotate the sky map 90 degrees counterclockwise so that the east side of the map faces down. The sky should still appear just like the map. Straight ahead, you'll see some bright stars halfway up the sky. They correspond to the stars printed on the map. Find the constellation Orion and locate the star Betelgeuse. It is identified on the star map. That is going to be our subject star tonight. You'll be looking at this star a lot over the next 5 minutes. We're going to determine how bright it is right now. Note that, again, I've written the magnitudes of some of the stars next to the stars. For instance, the star Sirius, low in the southeast, it is magnitude minus 1.46. Higher up and to the left, Castor and Pollux are magnitudes 1.58 and 1.55. So now compare the brightness of Betelgeuse to the stars in the sky. Remember that the lower the number, the brighter the star. So is Betelgeuse fainter than the star that is at magnitude 0.18? If so, then compare it to some of the fainter stars. Is it brighter than the star that is 2.06 magnitude? If so, then compare it to the stars between 0.18 and 2.06. Keep whittling it down until you're satisfied that you have a magnitude number to the closest tenth. Write this down along with the date and time, and do it again every few days and see if the brightness of the star Betelgeuse is changing over time. This is the binocular challenge for this week. We are going to use binoculars to observe something known as the double cluster. This consists of two open star clusters high in our evening sky. Its location is marked on both Star Map 1 and Star Map 2 for this podcast number 3. The double cluster is actually visible to the unaided eye under good conditions. The two clusters also have identifications in what is known as the New General Catalog, or NGC. And one is known as NGC 869, and the other is NGC 884. Now, neither was listed by Charles Messier in his catalog, so they have no M numbers. Through binoculars, the double cluster is very spectacular, each cluster sparkling with hundreds of stars. They're not identical, and so note the difference between the two in size, number of stars, and density. The distance between them is about a half a degree. And for open star clusters, they're fairly distant from us at about 7,500 light years away. While you're in the area, move about a half a degree north of the double cluster and see if you can see comet Pan stars, also known as C/2017T2. It is magnitude 9, so it will appear faint, but look for a small, round, fuzzy object. That is the comet. This week's telescopic challenge is to view that comet through a telescope. This is comet Pan-STARRS 2007T2. The comet was discovered by the Pan-STARRS Sky Survey in Hawaii in October 2017, while it was still far from the sun. It's been moving into the inner solar system, and it is expected to become one of the brightest comets of the year. But you will need at least a pair of good binoculars to see it. This week, we'll look for it in our telescopes. The comet will reach its closest point to the sun in early May of this year, and even then it will be far from the sun, farther than the planet Mars is from the sun. Presently, it's high in our evening sky near the double cluster, and it's moving slowly over the next few weeks. It will be passing just north of the double cluster on January 25th through the 29th. It is indicated on the map you can get from my website, donmacholtz.com, and is on this map, Podcast 3, Map 2. To find comet pan stars, use low magnification, which will give you your widest field of view, and point your telescope in the direction of the double cluster, and then go about a half a degree north, sweep a little bit east or west from there, and you should be able to pick it up. The comet will appear as a big fuzzy fog ball, slightly brighter in the center. You might notice a short stubby tail, but you'll need dark skies to see it well. Fun fact, something about my comet hunting. 45 years ago on January 1st, 1975, I began a program of systematic visual comet hunting, that is, scanning the sky for new comets. I've been out comet hunting for every one of those 540 months since, that is at least 1 hour each month and averaging 15, and have now accumulated 8,526 hours of eye-to-eyepiece comet hunting. I've visually discovered 12 comets during those 45 years. For 2019, last year, the numbers are in. I did 111 hours of comet hunting in 89 sessions, most of them in the mornings. You can go to my website, donmacholtz.com, and download the spreadsheet showing the number of hours I've searched each month and each year, the first time I've ever made this information public. On the morning of January 8th, 2020, a comet hunter by the name of Masaraki Iwamoto picked up a new comet in the morning sky. Now, this was not a visual discovery. He was using a 400-millimeter focal length lens with a 100-millimeter aperture and a Canon digital camera. This is like a sensitive camera with a large telephoto lens. Iwamoto has discovered three other comets, one in 2013. Then he co-discovered the one I found in November 2018. Then the next month he picked up his third. All the comets have been found using the digital camera. So, what was different about this one? Iwamoto had taken only one photo of the comet lasting 1 minute. Now, the Bureau for Astronomical Telegrams, the clearinghouse for comet discoveries, needs a follow-up for confirmation of the comet's existence. Someone needs to get out there and see or image it again. And if not, it would not be confirmed and it would be considered lost. The problem is that with only a 1 minute exposure, it was difficult to estimate its future position. Extrapolating a 1 minute change in position out for 2 or 3 days can lead to large errors, so large that no one would be sure where the comet will be on the next morning and the days after that. And the imaging equipment used by most astronomers have a small field of view. Added to this are two additional challenges. The comet was only 33 degrees from the sun and was low in the sky and visible for only a short period of time each morning, and the moon was becoming full and washing out the sky. This is similar to a problem that I faced in March of 2010 with my 11th comet discovery. I discovered the comet one morning, and for the next two mornings was clouded out, and the comet could not be confirmed. On the third morning, as the sky cleared, I swept a large area centered on the discovery position, and after 58 minutes, I picked it up. The story is on my website under Visual Comet Discoveries. Click on the menu bar to the right of the red house symbol, then click on Visual Comet Discoveries, and finally click on the plus sign and read the story for March 23, 2010. So you are like three clicks away. It will have you at the edge of your seat. So with no one being able to confirm Iwamoto's discovery, I decided to give it a try. I had a few things working against me. For first, I had swept the area some 30 hours before Awamoto found the comet, and I swept over it, not seeing it. It was simply too faint at about magnitude 13. Secondly, by time I heard about his find, the moon was now just past full and in the morning sky. It was a long shot, but the least that I could do to help Awamoto get this comet confirmed. Yeah, comet hunters do help each other out from time to time. So on the morning of Saturday, January 11th, with a full moon setting in the west, I spent an hour carefully visually sweeping a large area looking for the comet. I did not find it. Luckily, 2 days later, it was picked up by another amateur astronomer using an electronic camera attached to a telescope. So it was confirmed, and congratulations to Masayaki Awamoto. A preliminary orbit for the comet shows that it was closest to the sun on the day that it was picked up by Awamoto, that is January 8th, and its distance from the sun at that time was just under one astronomical unit. The comet will continue to move through the morning sky, getting further from the sun each morning, and on February 7th, it makes a close passage past the star Vega. It should brighten by about one magnitude over the next few weeks, and then it will dim. It's more or less on the far side of the sun right now from us. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmacholz.com. That is spelled donmacholz.com. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss the astronomer Charles Messier in his catalog of 110 galaxies, clusters, and nebula, in seeing all or most of them in one night. This event is held each year and is called the Messier Marathon. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.